It is a state capitol report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. With nearly 12,000 miles of state-maintained highways in Wisconsin, we check in with the state transportation department on the status of construction projects like roads and bridge improvements, repairs. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Craig Thompson is Secretary of the State Department of Transportation. Secretary Thompson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So Wisconsin having about roughly 80 construction projects active throughout the state. You know, as you see winter months setting in, are you satisfied with progress on these jobs?
Yeah, we really are. We had a great year. Actually, overall, the weather cooperated pretty well for us this year. Our workforce was able to remain stable, and we got about 350 projects done over this year, over $1 billion worth. So we were very happy with the season.
Was it more active than previous seasons?
Yes, it has been more active, and next year will be again as well, with both the increased funding that we've gotten at the state level, and then, of course, the money that's come in as part of the bipartisan infrastructure law has allowed us to get more projects going.
I was looking at that map showing about 200 projects in design and scheduled for construction, kind of in that holding pattern phase, if you will, in the Southwest region alone. And there are 12 active ones currently. Does that show any type of backlog there? Why are there so many projects waiting to start?
Well, there's even more projects than what we have listed that could be done. But I think what we're showing there is ones that we've got in design and ready to go. And that's something we felt very good about, that we've gotten that shelf ready again of projects that when we get the funding, like what came through at the federal level, that we've got them in a position where they're ready to go. That wasn't the case 4 years ago. So we've done a lot of work. Our folks have done a lot of work to build up that shelf so that we have projects that are at a point, that are designed to a point that if we get the necessary funding, that we're ready to deliver them.
Earlier this month, you celebrated the completion of the Metro Milwaukee Zoo Interchange North Leg Project. What impact will this project's total completion have on our state's transportation network?
Yeah, that's obviously a huge project to have done. The core was done a while ago, but for those of us traveling through there, you don't really realize the full operational benefits of the interchange until it's all done. Mm-hmm. So now that the North Leg is done, which is that area closer to Mayfair Mall, up by 45 North and Swan Boulevard, right by the medical campus, now that that's complete, it is going to make that commute and for everybody there much safer, and it's going to feel a lot better and be able to move through there a lot more easily.
Are there lessons learned? I mean, this is a project that stretched 12 or so years. Takeaways from that?
Yeah, well, I think there was a lot of complexities with this project. We had a railroad bridge. We had a lot of things. But one of the takeaways is the fact that the north leg of this component was stalled for a while. And anytime you have these stops and starts, it ends up costing more and you lose efficiency for staging and scheduling. So the more that we can stay on schedule, have consistent funding and schedules, the better it is for everyone.
How did the budget shape up for this project in the end?
Well, like I said, funding for the North Leg had been put on hold. The two budgets ago, under Governor Evers' first budget, we were able to propose getting it going again. Legislature agreed, and so we were able to get it back on track. But you know, once you stop and start again, it takes longer.
Talking about state highways and construction projects, Craig Thompson, Transportation Secretary, with us. You can join in with your questions and comments at any point, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So in less than a month, it'll be officially winter in Wisconsin. How prepared is the Transportation Department snowplow fleets for the winter months?
So on that, Kate, first of all, I'd like to wish everybody happy Snowplow Appreciation Day, which is today.
Right.
And when you asked that question, I'm glad you asked it, because Wisconsin is unique among the 50 states in this country. We don't have our own at the state level snowplow fleets. We actually contract with our 72 county highway departments to not only maintain their own system, but we contract with them to do the snow removal and maintenance on our state highway system as well. We think it's a great partnership. It works very well. But we do want people to, now that there is some snow on the ground and we're having winter weather, please be mindful of those snowplow operators out there for your own safety and for their safety as well.
So earlier this month, AAA had predicted more than 55 million Americans would be traveling for Thanksgiving this year. How prepared were Wisconsin roads for the increased traffic?
I think we were ready. We had a lot of some of our main arteries that there was construction on. We had buttoned up and got the barrels out in anticipation of that to try to keep things moving better. But a lot of the areas that we've had already improved and the shoulders were in good shape. So I think our system was ready for it.
I want to turn to electric vehicles and that infrastructure. When we last had you on in the summer of 2022, you said you were asking for federal support in building electric vehicle charging stations. What is the plan now to expand charging across Wisconsin?
Yeah, so we have a very aggressive plan that we've had approved by the federal government to use the money that's in the bipartisan infrastructure law for deploying fast chargers. Wisconsin's eligible for $78 million of that money over the next several years. We proposed our alternative fuel corridors to really blanket the entire state. It's all of our interstates, and it's Highway 2 and Highway 8 and 29 across the northern part and 141 up the northeast. So we're going to be going out to RFP soon. Within days, I think. But we do still need some legislative change at the state level to be able to make sure that the entities that we contract with can sell by the kilowatt hour and not be regulated as an electric utility. But we're hopeful that legislation will get passed in January.
Yeah, can you talk more about that? Billing by the kilowatt hour is a requirement in the federal program. So is Wisconsin able to do that, allow EV chargers to bill drivers for the amount of electricity they use?
Right now, unless you're an electric utility, you just have to charge by time, which, as you said, is not even allowed under the receiving that money, and it's not a very wise way to go about doing it. Wisconsin, before having this, has a law in the books that says if you sell by the kilowatt hour, that you have to be regulated as an electric utility. And so what we need is the legislation that's being introduced, I believe, by Senator Markline, to be able to not have these entities regulated as an electric utility under this. And I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to get that passed.
With $78 million you mentioned coming from the federal pot of money for infrastructure, will that enable Wisconsin to have enough EV charging providers in the state?
Yeah, I believe so. We as part of the plan that we had approved, we had to identify spots along those corridors no more than every 50 miles and no more than 1 mile off an exit where these could go in, that there would be the capacity and all that. So we've identified 62 locations. People can go on our website. You can actually click on the map and see where all these are. But that $78 million would be enough to deploy these fast chargers in each of those designated areas.
Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson with us as we explore priority construction projects and policy efforts aimed at infrastructure in Wisconsin. Be part of the conversation. Call in with the question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with State Transportation Department Secretary Craig Thompson, checking in on construction projects around the state and priority policy issues connected to transportation and infrastructure. Be part of the discussion along the way. Call in with a question. Share your views. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jeff in Wausau is with us. Jeff, hi.
Yes, hello. Wonderful program as always.
Thanks, Jeff.
Before I ask my Rose question, may I ask Mr. Thompson, have you read Blankets by Wisconsin's own Craig Thompson?
I have not, but I'm writing it down right now.
award-winning, world-renowned, you are world-famous already. Keep going. Blankets. Thank you.
All right, Jeff, go ahead with your question.
So the question is there any direct proof, academically research kind of thing, that shows the billions of investment in road building actually directly contributes to thriving expansions and boosts to the local economies?
So I think there's two parts to that, Jeff. There's a lot of what we're spending that is not doing any expansion at all. It's just maintaining what we have. But there has been a lot of there is data at the national level that shows the economic benefits from having a healthy transportation network and from having a healthy road network. Now, anytime you look at those, though, there's always opportunity costs where somebody could say, well, that same dollar could be spent on some other things as well. So, I think you always have to look at that in the larger context, but it definitely does show some significant, a lot of times 3-to-1 benefits of a benefit cost analysis for investing in our road system.
There is a proposed bill that would allow logging trucks to carry heavier loads across some state roads. How would heavier trucks affect road quality?
Well, Kate, we are always looking at that because we want to do what we can to maintain the condition of our roads, not have them deteriorate too rapidly, because we are spending the people's money to keep them in that condition. But at the same time, the reason that we have the roads there, and one of the reasons we have roads there, is to facilitate commerce in our state. And logging in the northern part of the state is it's the number one employer in some of our counties. So it's always a balance. We had our engineers look at this. There's some legislation for some more routes between here and Michigan. And with the axle configurations they have, we're comfortable that it won't have any additional undue wear and tear on the roads in there. It's not always on the same route. And so we have not had a problem with the legislation.
So Michigan's maximum weight limit is heavier than Wisconsin, as I understand it. Is that problematic for the logging industry and these log trucks that are traversing two states?
Yeah, that's been part of what has caused them some trouble, is because they are different amounts among the states. We're trying to talk with them. But we have, as long as there's certain axle configurations, and we're trying to expand the routes so that we can make it less cumbersome for the timber industry.
Can you explain what these additional timber routes would do?
Well, it would increase the weight limits on these different routes to try to harmonize with Michigan among some different more prominent timber routes in that area.
And the state legislature, as you mentioned, you are in favor of expanding timber routes, and the legislature will resume its voting schedule in January. As you look more holistically at transportation, what are you hoping lawmakers will act on in the new year?
Well, I talked about, this isn't a budget year this upcoming year, so it's more policy items that electric vehicle ability to sell by the kilowatt hour and not be regulated as electric utility is certainly a big one. Other than that, we'll be looking at, there might be some tweaks to our design build methodology for delivery, but there won't probably be major policy initiatives other than that. But we will be looking to the following year when we propose another budget for transportation.
Frank from Springbrook called in, and Frank says the state recently completed a roundabout project on Highway 53, and and says there aren't many roundabouts in their area, and is wondering what public feedback the transportation department is getting from this project.
I think we've heard positive things about that project, and generally it's funny how public perception about roundabouts has changed. I can't tell completely from his question, but the biggest thing we get about roundabouts now is people wanting more of them, which is certainly different than what I think folks heard here a decade ago. We do know that they definitely increase safety. If you do have accidents, they're not nearly as severe. And so it's reduced injuries and deaths in those. But every intersection, we do an impact analysis to determine whether it's appropriate, whether there's enough real estate, whether there's safety concerns, all those things about whether it's a controlled intersection, uncontrolled intersection, whether it's controlled with lights or a roundabout. But we do continue to put in roundabouts where we can, and we can improve safety.
do you see the number of roundabouts increasing, or do you find that it is something that you're able to go to more more readily with improved infrastructure?
Yeah, I think, again, when we have more consistent funding, we're able to look at some of these things more holistically. We've got a lot of localities across the street that are asking for roundabouts, and so this allows us to plan more, and I think you will continue to see some more roundabouts across the state.
Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson with us as we discuss state highways, construction projects underway. You can join in with your questions and comments about transportation, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So turning to rail, your agency is replacing the $25 ticket for Amtrak's Hiawatha line with a varying cost based on busier times and not so busy times. Why the change?
Well, we've talked with Amtrak. They've implemented that dynamic price in other areas, and it's worked well. We try to get people, if they look at it from an economic standpoint, to sort of smooth out when they go. So if you pick some more off-peak hours or less demand hours, you're going to be able to get tickets even cheaper than you were now. And if you're going at the high demand times, it might cost a little bit more, but no more than like $8 more than it had.
And when would be high demand times? When do you see the peaks?
I think generally in the areas where you'd think of the regular commute times, like on the roads, your travel times at the beginning and the end of the work days.
So there's the new Amtrak line connecting Twin Cities to Milwaukee and in Chicago, the intercity passenger rail service. How are the plans there in preparing for the new train line through Wisconsin?
So we're really excited for this. We're hoping to have it up sometime around March to April of next year. And we've been talking a lot with our friends in Illinois and Minnesota and Amtrak. For Minnesota, this will be a little bit new as far as owning and operating any equipment. We've had some of these agreements already with Illinois on our Hiawatha line. So there's still a fair amount of things that we have to work through, but we're very excited to offer that new service. I think it's going to be it's first new passenger rail service in Wisconsin sometime, and I think it's going to be really popular.
How much of a change could this be for Wisconsin in terms of rail? Could this be perhaps a gateway to other projects?
Well, I think so. I mean, at the end of the day, if people really, really like it and they let their elected people know that, I think our elected people respond to that. And I think there are potential for more for expanded passenger rail in Wisconsin, but there's got to be enough political will if in the future, if we're going to ever need to put any more resources into it, we're going to have to get buy-in in order to be able to do that.
Earlier this month, a National Transportation Association elected you as its next president. How will Wisconsin influence the national conversation about transportation projects?
Sure. Well, as president of the national group, it's known as ASHTO, the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials. It's the 52 state DOTs. As president, you're able to set the emphasis areas for the association. So, I think we'll be able to have quite a bit of input here from Wisconsin.
What is your role as president? How do you lead vision and what you take on?
So I've put out three emphasis areas for the National Association this year. The first is realizing the promise of the bipartisan infrastructure law, because there's things that we still need to work through as we're at the halfway point, increasing our focus on safety in everything we do, and then putting a lens on workforce and some strategies to be able to adapt to our changing workforce. So those are really the three emphasis areas that I've identified for the National Association. And so those are the things that we're going to be delving into specifically this year.
Can I hear a little bit more on that third piece on workforce? It seems as if your construction projects across the state, Wisconsin's construction projects, have been staffed up all right. And how do you get that workforce?
So we've got some great the operating engineers and the laborers and some other folks do a great job of getting people in and getting them trained. But we know there's workforce challenges across the country and just at the DOT ourselves. We continue to look at workforce challenges. And so we want to make sure we're doing the things we can to get people into the fields, STEM and engineering, and let people know that DOTs are doing a lot of different things these days. We're involved in AI and machine learning and a lot of different things. So we need some new disciplines as well coming into the department.
Secretary Crick Thompson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Craig Thompson leads the State Department of Transportation. And if you missed any part of the conversation, you can stream it later today at WPR.org/mornings. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore legislation that would allow dental therapists to practice in Wisconsin. The federal government's Health Resources and Services Administration counts over a dozen states and tribes that have adopted laws enabling dental therapy, including our neighbor Minnesota. Call in with a question or comments as we discuss dental therapy in oral health, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Rochelle Andre is Government Relations Specialist with the Wisconsin Primary Healthcare Association. The association includes 19 community health centers in Wisconsin. Rochelle, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Yes. So this month we see state lawmakers reintroduce a bill that would license dental therapists, and your organization supports this bill. Can you tell us why?
I would be delighted. Yes, we've been working on this dental therapy legislation along with the bill sponsor, Senator Felskowski, and Representative Plummer for several legislative sessions now, and we're pretty excited about it. Community health centers provide primary care to patients across Wisconsin, and that includes medical, dental, and behavioral health services. And it's because of those dental services and really the oral health access gaps and the outcome disparities across the state and the promise that we think that dental therapists could deliver on to improve those oral health outcomes for patients in Wisconsin.
Can you tell us a little bit about the gaps that you see in oral health?
Absolutely. So we took a look at some zip code data just recently, and we saw that across the zip codes in Wisconsin, about half of zip codes in the state don't have a licensed dentist practicing or registered in that zip code. So we know there are some gaps as to where the dentists are in Wisconsin. We also know that there are some pretty scary access gaps related to Medicaid enrollees. Those are folks who may be low income or qualify for other reasons for the state Badger Care program. So for example, we know that less than 40% of Medicaid enrolled children received any dental services at all in 2022. And that's pretty scary because we know that dental and oral health starts early. So when we look at those figures for children, we also know that many folks are putting off care if they can't find a provider or turning up in the emergency room, if they have to delay care, if things are exacerbated. For example, we also know that 1 in 5 fifth graders has untreated tooth decay, and that's contributing to kids missing school, having pain. And so we're really looking to move the needle on some of those access issues.
There was a public hearing recently on the dental therapist bill. Can you tell us a little bit about what was raised there?
Sure. There was a public hearing about 2 weeks ago on 4 oral health bills in the Assembly Health Committee. So that was very exciting. Dental therapy was one of those bills. And there was not any opposition shared at the hearing. There was support provided by the Hygienists Association, by other providers. There's also more than 30 groups actually that have signed on to a letter in support of the dental therapy legislation. So that includes free and charitable clinics, hospitals, advocates who work with individuals with special needs, community health centers, and other entities that really are looking to address oral health issues and look to dental therapy also as a free market solution and something that we know is working right across the border in Minnesota.
Could you step back for a moment and explain to us, what procedures could a dental therapist perform under the legislation?
Yes. So a dental therapist, and folks may not be familiar with that title since they're not currently authorized to practice in Wisconsin, but essentially a dental therapist is similar to a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant on a medical team, but on the dental team. So they practice sort of in between a dental hygienist and a general dentist. A dental hygienist can perform about 45 procedures in Wisconsin. A dental therapist could perform about 95, so double. They could do fillings, extract teeth, as long as that isn't a complex surgical extraction. And then a general dentist gets trained to do about 400 procedures, so much more than a hygienist can. But a dental therapist would practice as part of the oral health team under an agreement with a dentist and embedded in that team, just like a hygienist is now, but who can do a little bit more within their scope.
How does the Wisconsin Dental Association feel about creating a license for practicing dental therapists?
Yes, we've been working, and the bill authors have too, with the Wisconsin Dentists Association on this issue for several years, and we're at a point where the Dentists Association is neutral on the bill. We've made some adjustments to it to really clarify the employment model and the accreditation standards for dental therapists. There's a national accrediting body called CODA that has enacted accreditation standards, and essentially, we've agreed that it's important that dental therapists would be accredited or from an accredited program, rather, if they're practicing here in Wisconsin. So at this point, we're pleased to be continuing to work with the Dentists Association, and they are neutral on the bill, just like they were last session as well.
Rochelle Andre with us of the Wisconsin Primary Healthcare Association as we discuss legislation that would allow the licensing of dental therapists in Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Rochelle, the Badger Institute reports Minnesota as the first state to authorize dental therapists, more than 130 now practicing in Minnesota, treating at least 175,000 people. What could Wisconsin learn from Minnesota and the model there?
Well, we're fortunate that there's been a lot of good evidence coming out of Minnesota, a lot of studies there. So, for example, the Oral Health Workforce Research Center has a big study on dental therapists in Minnesota, and that study showed that dental teams are satisfied with the addition of dental therapists, that actually dentists can work more effectively and efficiently when teamed with a dental therapist. There is timelier service and reduced wait times, and that patients can get more dental needs met in a single visit. So, with all of that data, and something else that I think is really important to note, actually, 9% of the dental therapists in Minnesota, at least in 2019, were Spanish speaking. And many are working in underserved areas and with low income patients. So I think with all of that, there's a lot to learn from Minnesota. And our model in Wisconsin will be a little bit different, but it's been a benefit for a lot of the oral health teams in Minnesota, and we're excited about figuring out how to really apply that here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, how would Wisconsin's model differ if the legislation is passed and signed into law?
Sure. So the way Minnesota set up their programs, there's essentially two different tiers, and there's a few schools that are actually training dental therapists in Minnesota now. So we don't have that multiple tiered program here. Instead, the dental therapist would work under that collaborative management agreement with a dentist. And in order to practice under general supervision, they would have to practice for 2,000 hours directly with that dentist, which would really give the dentist a good sense of the skills and the competencies of that dental therapist. So we're really looking at a model to phase in dental therapists as quickly as we can, but also really responsibly so that all members of the team are confident in that dental therapist providing care for patients in Wisconsin.
In the area of education, there's a bill that would secure $20 million from the Joint Committee on Finance to fund technical college programs. How would funding support dental therapy?
Yes, that bill is also very exciting. So the legislature put $20 million in the budget last or this spring, last spring. And this essentially releases those funds and put the parameters around how the technical colleges in the state can deploy those funds. There are eight dental hygiene programs currently in the state. And dental hygiene programs are maybe a precursor to a dental therapist program if a technical college would like to go in that direction. But what this bill does in particular for dental therapy is it would provide up to $2 million for North Central Technical College to expand their current dental hygienist program and their dentist assistant program, and for development of a dental therapy program if that becomes authorized in Wisconsin. So we know that North Central Technical College is interested in pursuing that program, has been for a little while now, and these funds will help. They're a one-time fund, so it's really the upfront expenditures like capital needs, equipment costs, facility, and unfortunately, dental programs of all types, whether it's dental assistants or hygiene or dentistry, are quite expensive. There's a lot of tools and special equipment. So this would kind of be a jump start for North Central Tech to develop that program here in Wisconsin.
Let's take a call now. Kevin in Janesville. Kevin, hi. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Where would the dental therapist actually practice? Will they be affiliated with current dental spaces, offices, clinics, locations? Will they have to branch out on their own? And what about supervision? Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Rochelle.
Yes, Kevin, thank you for the question. That's definitely what, whenever I speak with dentists or other organizations, that's really what they want to know. What does this look like in practice? So, the dental therapist would need to be employed either by a dentist or by an organization like a hospital or a community health center or a free and charitable clinic. They cannot put out their own shingle, if you would, to set up their own practice. That's not the model of dental therapy at all. And under the legislation that we're working on in Wisconsin, a dental therapist would have to practice either in a dental health professions shortage area or in a setting that provides care to a population that is more than 50% special population. So that includes individuals who may have special needs, veterans, low-income individuals, et cetera. So they might be employed by just a typical dental practice or by a dentist or in a variety of other settings, but would not be practicing independently.
Rochelle Andre is Government Relations Specialist at the Wisconsin Primary Healthcare Association as we discuss legislation that would make way for dental therapists to practice in Wisconsin. Be part of the discussion. Call in with the question. Share your views at 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. could licensing dental therapists in Wisconsin open up access to oral health care in our state? We discuss legislation reintroduced this session that would authorize dental therapists to practice under certain conditions. And you can add your thoughts. Call in with the question, share in the discussion, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. The Wisconsin Primary Healthcare Association is advocating for the passage of this legislation. And Rochelle Andre is with us. It's government relations specialist. Rochelle, there was a public hearing recently held on a bill to enter Wisconsin into a dentist and dental hygienist compact, and the compact allowing dentists and dental hygienists to practice in all states participating in the compact. Your organization supports this legislation. Can you tell us about it?
I'd be delighted to. So this compact is brand new. There's a national body that develops interstate licensure compacts. And it was originally developed for veterans and their families to practice and do their work more transferably and easily across the U.S. But what this compact would do, if enacted, is allow both dentists and dental hygienists to practice more easily across state lines and in states that adopt the licensure compact. Each state still has authority over the providers that are practicing in their own state, and you still need to meet the state requirements for those providers. But three states so far have enacted the legislation, and it would be effective when seven do so. And it also develops a database and a system for sharing information about those licensed providers that are in the compact. And when I think about this, I really just think about getting the folks who are licensed and who are trained and skilled to provide the care to patients in Wisconsin practicing as easily as possible and removing those administrative barriers that can just throw a wrench in the works and may mean that it takes longer to get those providers into the clinical setting. So this would help a little bit. And especially thinking about maybe a dentist or a hygienist that practices in both Wisconsin and Iowa or Wisconsin and Minnesota, which is quite common. If both states were to enact this compact, it would make it a lot easier for those folks, you know, if they meet the requirements for both states to practice without redoing that administrative paperwork all the time.
And if your family would have to move out of state, that compact would also help, I would imagine, in this career area in order to take your skills and your abilities elsewhere in other states.
That's right. And, you know, if someone wants to move here and bring their spouse who may be a hygienist and someone else has another profession, it also helps incentivize that person to practice in Wisconsin, too, if we're in the compact, the same state that person is coming from.
So do you find, as you talk with lawmakers, that there is momentum in Wisconsin to join this compact? What is it like in terms of as you talk with lawmakers?
Yes, it seems that we've been a compact-friendly state. So we're in other healthcare compacts already, for example, for nurses. And the state is considering several other types of healthcare compacts right now that are moving through the legislative process. For example, for licensed clinical social workers, there are several other compacts that all seem to have some good momentum this session.
We're talking about oral health care and access with Rochelle Andre of the Wisconsin Primary Healthcare Association. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Ron in Manitowoc. Ron, hi. What would you like to ask?
Thank you. Good morning. I'm wondering what Rochelle is doing to work forward to have Medicare cover oral health. In the past, the National Dental Association has been the biggest impediment for such coverage.
Ron, thank you. Medicare covering oral health. Rochelle, what can you tell us on that front?
Yes, that's a really good point. We do have a generous Medicaid program, which is the state program that does cover dental services for adults, which not every state does. But exactly as your caller noted, there is not Medicare coverage for dental services, and that can be a really big burden on a lot of families. And, you know, as noted before, when you don't have a dental coverage, it can land you in the emergency room because these kind of services can be quite expensive for complex care. So this is an issue that we do hear about from patients pretty frequently, that, you know, folks who need it don't have the type of coverage in the Medicare program. And I know there have been initiatives at the national level to change that, but I haven't seen a very, very serious indicator that that change will happen anytime soon. And that is unfortunate because a lot of folks don't have other options right now.
So I want to turn now to Medicaid. Your organization says that in 2022, less than 40% of Medicaid-enrolled children received any dental services, and states are required to provide dental benefits to children covered by Medicaid or CHIP. What are the barriers for children to get access to care?
Yes, this is definitely concerning, and Wisconsin isn't alone in this effort or in that data. But we do know that there are just a lot of barriers that families face to accessing preventative or restorative dental care in Wisconsin. So when you think about it, if a family, let's say parents are working multiple jobs, a dental practice may not be open after school when you need to get someone into care. Maybe parents don't have the transportation they need, or maybe they can't find a provider that takes their Medicaid insurance. The nice thing is that community health centers in the state, there are 19 and they served almost 300,000 patients last year. They do provide services regardless of a patient's insurance status or their ability to pay. So they do take Medicaid patients, but often may have a wait list or can't get folks in timely unless there is an emergency or some other urgent need for care. So we do need to really have an all hands on deck effort to figure out how to address that access concern for children. And there are a lot of really exciting initiatives in the state. We just need to do more.
In our last moments together, there is the initiative Seal a Smile program, providing free preventative oral health care in Wisconsin schools. How successful is this program?
Oh, I love the Seal a Smile program. It's really a wonderful collaborative effort between the Children's Health Alliance, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, and Delta Dental of Wisconsin. Last year, Seal a Smile served about 80,000 children, sealed 100,000 teeth, applied fluoride varnishes, and provided over $18 million in preventative dental care in Wisconsin schools. There were 27 organizations that received grants, including community health centers, health departments, hospitals, and free clinics. That program is really moving the needle on providing that preventative care to families and kids, specifically in the school setting. Really a great innovation.
Richelle, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kate.
Richelle Andre is Government Relations Specialist at the Wisconsin Primary Healthcare Association. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.